On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Chi and Mr. Curtis Franklin here today. Lots of people and organizations are buying into IoT and smart devices platforms now, whether it be for smart homes or just enhancing organizations' operations. Now, what if the platform that your devices were on just up and disappeared? We'll talk about one such example. So we also have a great guest today. Lots of organizations are moving into the hybrid or multi-cloud scenarios. It's not easy managing all those resources. Today we have Pete Monka, Senior VP of GM of Dell Apex, and we're going to talk about how organizations can move to those cloud services, digitally transform quickly and securely without sacrificing choices in the cloud. You definitely shouldn't miss it. Twiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 490, recorded April 22nd, 2022. Cloudy with a chance of SLAs. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Hover. Whether you're a developer, photographer, or small business, Hover has something for you to expand your projects and get the visibility you want. Go to hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. And by Linode. With Linode, there's no hidden fees and you can scale up or down without a penalty. Hit $100 in credit, visit linode.com/twiet. And by Plextrack, the proactive security management platform. Save time and increase productivity with the premier cybersecurity reporting and workflow management product designed to support the complete security lifecycle from assessment through remediation. Visit plextrack.com/twit to claim your free month. Welcome to Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through this big world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their field. Plus, I love ending my week with my favorite people, starting with an expert in enterprise and security. He is a senior analyst at Omdia, and he's Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, how's the week treating you?
Lou, it's been a pretty darn good week here in Orlando. We've had just enough action in the cybersecurity market to make things interesting, but no real disasters. I've been doing research on my continuing work on cybersecurity awareness training, and I'm starting to get lots of inquiries about RSA and meeting people in person in San Francisco in June. So plenty to keep me busy. Plenty to look forward to.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for being here, Curtis. Well, we also have to welcome back our IT and network expert. He's also net architect at Sky Fiber, and he's the all-around tech geek, Mr. Brian Chi. Chiever, it's always great to have you. How's your week treating you?
Actually, pretty good. I just got some announcement information from MikroTik. They've got some really cool pieces of hardware. I've used them with my partner in crime, where we mount a 90-degree spread panel antenna with radio up on top of a large platform, say over a stage, and then be able to hit multiple receivers out in the field that are also PoE powered, so that we can go and provide high-speed net in a very portable fashion. In fact, we carry them around in a Pelican case. So there's some new ones coming out that instead of only being able to do maybe, I don't know, 800 to 1,000 feet, the new ones will get me out to about 3 kilometers. Wow. So it basically allows us to do more interesting things on portable venues. And I'm actually thinking about using them for Maker Faire in Orlando coming up, I think, November.
All the fun toys, Chiebert. All the fun toys. Well, thanks, Chiebert, for being here. You know what? We should probably get started because there's a lot going on in the enterprise. Lots to talk about here. Now, lots of people and organizations are buying into IoT and those smart device platforms. Now, whether it be for smart homes or enhancing their organization's operations, smart devices are at the center of it all. But what if the platform your devices were on just up and disappeared? What would you do? We'll discuss one such instance. We also have a great guest today. Lots of organizations in the hybrid are moving to hybrid and multi-cloud scenarios. It's not easy to manage all those resources, let alone secure them. Today we have Pete Manca, Senior VP and GM of Dell Apex, to talk about Dell Apex Cloud Services and organizations can digitally transform quickly and securely without sacrificing choices in cloud. So stick around. We have lots to talk about here. But before we do, before we get to our guests and all the other topics, to go around the world and talk about this week's news blips. Illegal content on platforms is the driving force behind the landmark Digital Services Act that the EU is moving forward on. The question is, how will it impact some of the largest technology companies out there? And what will happen with the Googles and Amazons and the Facebooks of the world? Non-compliances of the new rules means that organizations will need to pay as much as 6% of their global annual sales as a penalty once the rules go into effect in 2024. Now, to put that into perspective, Amazon could face a bill of $26 billion in fines, and Google could face as much as $15 billion in fines. Now, the DSA is also targeting social media companies. In fact, part of the new rules are looking for a ban on using sensitive data such as race or religion for targeting ads, preventing targeting or targeted ads at minors, and forbidding the use of dark patterns, which is a tactic to push people into consenting to online tracking. Now, you may be wondering, who is impacted by the new DSA? Well, all websites will be required to follow the new rules. However, platforms and sites that have more than 45 million users will need to follow even stricter rules. That means they may need to pay a third party to ensure that they're following the rules, or even provide regulators with reports about illegal and harmful content on their sites. That means the EU could issue fines or require changes made to policies if companies can't show they're doing enough to combat harmful content. Now, to me, there's no better way to hold large organizations accountable for new rules. The question is, are these new rules compatible with a free and open internet? Think about it.
Well, since the days when they were made by IBM, ThinkPad laptop computers have been considered standard bearer systems for enterprise users. That hasn't changed under Lenovo's ownership, which makes the announcement of firmware level vulnerabilities in more than 100 different models of ThinkPad a matter of some concern. These vulnerabilities could give attackers a way to deliver malware that might persist on a system even after a hard drive replacement or operating system reinstall. Security vendor ESET discovered the vulnerabilities and reported them to Lenovo in October of last year. This week, Lenovo released BIOS updates addressing the flaws in all impacted models. Two of the vulnerabilities involve Unified Extensible Firmware Interface, or UEFI, drivers that were intended for use only during the manufacturing process, but were inadvertently left as part of the shipping BIOS image. The third is a memory corruption bug and a function for detecting and logging system errors. Now, each of these has now been patched, though users will have to install the updates manually or deploy Lenovo's automated tools to assist with the update. According to ESET researchers, the two UEFI vulnerabilities could allow attackers to directly disable critical security protections that prevent unauthorized modifications to boot code and BIOS firmware. The third vulnerability provides a door into the storage area where privileged system code lives, with obvious implications for various bad outcomes. Lenovo has publicly thanked ESET for the discovery and for using responsible disclosure in waiting for patches to be available before making the vulnerabilities public. See? Sometimes the security researcher world works exactly like it's supposed to.
Well, thank you to the folks at Gizmodo for breaking this story. Well, so the story goes on about Delta Airlines is now testing the Starlink satellites for in-flight Wi-Fi. So while this article doesn't go into any kind of detail, the physics involved with handling moving satellite connections on a moving vehicle is definitely an advanced course in dealing with satellite pass-offs, fading signals, bounce signals, and just plain poor installations of the receiving dish. Oh, and in a YouTube video I found, the poor guy had to tie down his receiving antenna to keep it from flying away if the airstream going under that antenna got too, shall we say, brutal when driving around on his RV that he was using for testing. Well, anyway, on systems like Dish TV, an RV typically needs a gimbal under a dome to keep the receiver dish pointed at the closest satellite. But in this case, the antenna is a flat plate with multiple elements on it, and the steering is done electronically in a manner similar to how modern military radar systems steer their beams. I'm actually really looking forward to Starlink getting out of the experimental stage and making this technology available to the general public. Speaking as a scientist that does a lot of field work, yeah, having that kind of bandwidth out in the field would be awesome.
It would be a very odd week in the world of tech if we didn't hear about a new vulnerability in a mobile platform. Now, this week is no exception. Researchers have uncovered a vulnerability that could have allowed hackers to commandeer millions of Android devices equipped with mobile chipsets made by Qualcomm and MediaTek. Now, here's the interesting part. The vulnerability is inside Apple's lossless audio codec. That's right. Apple introduced the audio format back in 2004. They have already plugged the vulnerability in their proprietary version of the codec, but in the open source version of it used by Qualcomm and MediaTek has not been updated since 2011. Say what? To put this into perspective, Qualcomm and MediaTek supply mobile chipsets for an estimated 95% of U.S. Android devices. The bug is being exploited as an out-of-bounds vulnerability. That means that it can retrieve data from outside the limits of allocated memory. Now, hackers could exploit this mistake to force the decoder to execute malicious code that normally would not be possible. What's worse is the issue could be used as a remote execution attack via malformed audio file. Now, imagine you get an SMS message from a random person, and it's attached a audio file, and you go and play it. Now, a good thing here is that the both chipset manufacturers have submitted patches to Google and your device platforms as well. But the key here is they have to update. You have to go and update. Now, if the patch level shows of your OS that is greater than December 2021, the device is no longer vulnerable. Now, this brings up a huge topic about open source platforms. As an example, Google has an open source Chromium platform, right? It's a browser. It's built into Chrome, which a lot of browsers outside of Google use as their baseline. However, what if Google fixed things in Chrome and in Chromium before they offered it to the open source community? It's a very similar scenario, right? That means you and your organization have to start being critical over open source, especially when it's not maintained and becomes very stale. Think about that. Well, folks, that does it for the Blips. Next up, we have the News Bites. But before we get to the News Bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Hover. It's time to make plans and let Hover help you achieve them. If you're a blogger, creating a portfolio, building an online store, or just want to make a more memorable redirect to your LinkedIn page, Hover has the best domain names and email addresses just for you. Email at your domain name is the key to connecting with customers and building trust for your brand. They have domain-based emails for all of your needs, small or large. It's so easy to set up. You can add as many mailboxes to your domains as you need. When your domain renews, your mailboxes will too. The prices are unbeatable. Their most popular mailbox is a no-brainer solution for business owners. Get access from anywhere. You can use the email app you're already using, or you're already comfortable with, but your app isn't your thing. Their webmail can be accessed wherever you are as well. Personally, I really love the ease of use. They have a huge collection of TLDs for Hover, plus super easy to transfer. That's right. Makes life a lot easier. Hover isn't here to upsell you on stuff you don't need. They just want to help. They have pro-level tools, powerful domain and email management tools that are intuitive and easy to use, whether you're a web pro or just getting started. It's private and secure with Whois privacy protection included with your domain purchase. Your private information will remain just that, private. It's a great way to reduce spam and protect yourself from unwanted solicitations. Hover Connect lets you pick the service you want to use to build and host your website. Connect helps you start using the domain name with just a couple clicks. At Hover, you're a customer and not a source of data. Hover is trusted by hundreds of thousands of customers who use the domain names and emails to turn their ideas into a reality. Whether you're a developer, photographer, or a small business, Hover has something for you to expand your projects and get the visibility you want. Go to hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. That's hover.com/twit for 10% off your domain extension for a full year. And we thank Hover for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the news bites. Now, lots of people and organizations they're buying into smart device ecosystems. I know I am. I know lots of organizations out there that are doing it. The platform you choose is just as important as the device and the manufacturer. Now, devices that are bound to a specific platform could be at a greater risk to the fate of a recent system, Insteon. Labeled as the most reliable home automation technology using both existing wires, power lines, and radio frequency communication, they were supposed to add smart home technology to lighting, appliances, and much more. Now, the controllers out there, they were just $80 plus an individual controller like a light switch, a fan control, range from $50 to $80. But, you know, in fact, in actually 2005, they launched more than 200 products, and then there was lots more today. It had a huge potential and a lot of following. However, behind the scenes, it seems that Insteon couldn't handle their operating costs. That's right. And they moved to sell the company in late March. However, that fell through quickly and they quickly shut down their services and sites last week. Now, Insteon blames the trouble and disruption on supply chain and the deal to save them falling through. However, all of their customers are now left out to dry. In fact, Insteon is now in what they call a liquidation phase. Now, all of this brings up a big topic. Should you buy into smart home automation, or even a proprietary platform that deals with that? Or do you stick with more compatible platforms like Home Assistant Policy or Z-Way, which can be used on any of these other platforms? Like, for instance, you can add a Z-Wave device to, like, let's say, a Ring platform. Curtis, I want to throw this to you first. This is a problem no matter where you are in technology, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, this is not the first time we've seen something like this. We've seen other cloud platforms go away, sometimes with essentially no notice, taking away the ability of devices to be used. There have been photo storage cloud sites that have gone away, taking the ability to reach these photo portfolios with them. There are a couple of famous smartwatches where the servers went away. And while hacker groups and maker groups have come up with backdoor solutions for the vast majority of users, that meant that it was simply impossible to use those watches anymore. This is a case where it seems very likely that these devices are going to be very difficult for their owners to get any use from. Do I have a great deal of faith in the maker and hacker communities to come up with a solution? Yes. Is that solution going to be as easy to use as simply getting service from the original manufacturer and vendor? No. So for the vast majority of people who have one of these installed, welcome to your new paperweight.
But, you know, Curtis, you bring up a good point. You know, a lot of people have even cloud service lock-in sometimes in hopes that they're, you know, trusting even some of the smaller cloud service companies in the market to ensure that they have stability and reliability. And they buy into these platforms in hopes of that. You know, the question is, you know, well, what helps protect you for something like this? Cheaper? What, you know, you obviously have lock-in from no matter where platform you go, but is there something to protect you? Like, what's to do here?
Yeah, it's a tough call. Realistically, the platforms that are going to be the least susceptible to the cloud back end going away and leaving you high and dry are actually the ones that don't require the cloud. While I don't need to really name names, there are pseudo-professional IoT devices for lighting, fans, gates, pumps, all kinds of stuff that have a combination. One vendor that I started playing with can be either cloud and, as a result, also a smartphone app controlled, but it also ties into the Amazon Echo environment or the Google Home environment. Additionally, they have a full JSON interface so that anyone that wants to write to the API can. So what's cool, that also means even if your net is down, you know, say your home is up, but the internet feed to you is down, you can still control it. So there are, in some cases, local servers like MQTT that allows you to, you know, run without even an internet connection. Now, what it does kind of bring up is, we're going to start taking a good hard look at something. Insteon, in this case, was considered more of a consumer item. There are quite a few other devices that are considered more enterprise, and then there's quite a few that are almost in between. One of the things that I'm kind of starting to think about is, is it time to start really thinking about service level agreements for IoT devices, especially if you have a really large investment, say office building. For instance, let's use InfoWorld magazine as an example, because I have direct experience. If you wanted to stay past, I think it was 6 p.m., you actually had to dial a extension on your desk telephone and type in your employee number and also a zone number. So you basically, your account code would be charged for the additional air conditioning and lighting power that was used for the after hours work. So on systems like that, if they require a cloud connection, my personal knee jerk is, maybe it's time to start asking for a service level agreement, because the investment that I would put into a good size corporation could be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, especially if you start tying in air conditioning, lighting, fire, you name it. Elevators are another one.
Right.
So maybe, just maybe, this is a harbinger of things to come. The little guys, you know, Smart Labs is not exactly the biggest corporation in the world. And they've been around a long time. They actually helped build the consumer IoT industry. But even when they got bought by Insteon, it didn't really grow. And now the consumer market is really going crazy. Actually, smart hubs like the Amazon Echo and Google Home have actually done a lot to blur the lines between the capabilities of consumer and commercial IoT devices. So I think this is going to be a really interesting show to watch, because I think it's going to make a lot of changes. I'm especially interested in see what happens with things like Z-Wave, only because that's actually based on Zigbee, and because it was, the research was done under the DARPA umbrella, the licensing fees are dramatically lower. I believe LoRa is also a similar case. So the wireless transport that is tying together all this IoT stuff, I think, is going to make a difference. And because Insteon and their devices were based on protocols that required some fairly hefty licenses, maybe it's going to push the IoT world in the same direction the internet, you know, the local area network world went, because Ethernet was developed by DARPA, and thus you don't have giant licensing fees, whereas Token Ring had big licensing fees to IBM and TI, and we all see how much Token Ring's in use today. So it's going to be an interesting market to watch.
You know, I actually have a good friend who owns a bunch of properties, some Airbnbs, some rentals, you know, a small business. And he actually had a bunch of Insteon, you know, because obviously he wants to be able to manage his properties, making sure, like you were saying, people are not, you know, upping the, you know, the heater in the pool, or turning on, you know, leaving the water on, or leaving the air conditioning running at full blast for a long period of time, because again, they don't necessarily pay for those things when they do Airbnbs. And so he managed all of that, and then things just stopped working And so again, probably I would say maybe not hundreds of thousands of dollars in, but maybe tens of thousands of dollars of like devices and smart plugs and switches and so on that were in, that he went in on, to manage his property. So this is a big deal for small businesses. This is not an easy, thing to swallow, when it comes to, if you've kind of like bought into the ecosystem. Now, Curtis, I want to throw this to you because this is bigger. This is even bigger, a bigger deal when it comes to enterprise. Because obviously, if enterprises like, let's say, the Anheuser, like for instance, Anheuser-Busch's of the world, they go into a bunch of smart devices. They go beyond their PLCs and into more smart devices into their warehouses, into their brew plants, and they buy into a particular platform. There needs to be, like Cheever said, some SLA, some guarantees. What is different when it comes to enterprise IoT?
Well, the two big things that are different is typically the size of the company backing the devices. In IoT, you have companies like Siemens, and no one is worried about Siemens just disappearing one night. The other thing, and this has been thought about, when it comes to cloud services, you have to agree on your, or you have to lean on your SLAs. You have to lean on the contractual agreement. And often there are things in there about who owns the data, who gets to have access to the data in case the cloud provider goes away. The other thing that you are seeing, and this cropped up a number of years ago, is the notion of code escrow. So if you are dependent upon a particular application or a particular piece of firmware, whatever it might be, and you're worried about that vendor going away, you can demand that the code be delivered to a third party for safekeeping, just like you would do with money in an escrow account when you're buying a house or doing something like that. The idea is that if the provider goes away, then you, the consumer, the enterprise consumer, can get access to the code and keep your business running. If everything moves along as need be, then the code is never touched. It is a significant issue. We've talked here on Twiat about things like no code, low code. Often those are interpreted systems that at runtime go through a cloud provider in order to do that translation from the flow code, the flow chart, the diagram, into actual code. If that cloud goes away, the ability to create code goes away. So this is a non-trivial issue and one that a lot of lawyers have spent a bunch of billable hours on. And there's not a single universal answer. This is the kind of thing that is seriously negotiated every time a big enterprise contract is signed.
Right. It's too bad that, consumers or even small businesses are not as protected as much as the enterprise is. I think the IT, like even the chat room is saying, hey, I haven't bought into IoT yet. It's just too vulnerable. It's too expensive, and things like this can happen. And I agree. Like I think that I only bought in a small amount, and I bought into some of the bigger names that are out there and into the Z-Wave devices. But in the same sense, there's a similar risk. And I think I started putting money into it and said, I'm going to stop. I'm going to only use it for critical things because I just knew that things are going to be changing. Contracts are going to be up and down. Prices are going to be up and down. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see how this thing evolves over time. Well, folks, that does it for the Bites. Next up, we have our guest. My favorite part of the show. We get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twiat Riot. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of this week in enterprise tech. And that's Linode. Cloud services and hosting are always on organizations' minds. That means you're probably already looking to or maybe even using Linode. Linode offers the industry's best price to performance value for all compute instances, including shared, dedicated, high memory and GPUs. Get free DDoS, cloud firewall, unfiltered API access, and more. Linode offers predictable, flat fee pricing, which is universal across all 11 of its data centers. If you haven't chosen Linode yet, you might be asking, why choose Linode? Well, you'll get support experience above the rest. People choose Linode because they demand a better customer support experience. Linode's independence and mission drive them to a different standard with the customer. It's the driving force behind everything they do. They have pay-as-you-go, predictable and transparent pricing. In fact, Linode pioneered the predictable flat pricing model for cloud computing. No more anxiety over hidden costs. They make it simple to launch and scale in the cloud because with Linode, you'll get flat pricing across every global data center, an intuitive cloud manager, a full-featured API, best-in-class documentation, and award-winning support. That means that Linode makes it easy to manage your applications in the cloud. Not only that, but Linode has proven secure and reliable enterprise-grade infrastructure. With their extensive peering relationships and their next-generation network, Linode delivers the modern infrastructure and performance you need to innovate at scale. Whatever you want to do, you can host your website and build your app or even back up your media. Plus, you can easily launch and enrich your developer applications, hosted services, your websites, AI and machine learning workloads, gaming services, or CI/CD environments. And you can launch and scale in the cloud with their virtual machines. You can even choose shared and dedicated compute instances, or you can use your $100 in credit on S3 compatible object storage, managed Kubernetes, and more. There are a lot of cloud providers out there that don't make things easy to be productive. Some of them have dashboards coming out their ears, not with Linode. I actually found them really easy to use. Linode was rated the easiest to use by G2 Crowd in 2021. That's why cloud developers choose Linode, because they make managing complex cloud infrastructure easy with simple bundled pricing, full-featured API, and 100% human support. Linode helped pioneer cloud computing back in 2003, 3 years before AWS, so they have the longevity you know can be trusted. With Linode, there's no hidden fees, and you can scale up or down without penalty. Get $100 in credit. Visit linode.com/Twyatt. That's linode.com/Twyatt. And we thank Linode for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring the guests to drop some knowledge on the Twyatt Riot. And today we have Pete Manca. He's Senior VP and GM of Dell Apex. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Thanks, Luke. It's great to be here.
Now, Pete, our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. Now, because everyone has a really unique journey, can you take us through your journey through tech and what brought you to Dell Apex?
Sure. I'll give you the abridged version, but I started off my career as a software developer, and probably the first turning point was 6 months in, where I quit the large established company I was in and went to work at an early stage startup, which a lot of people might think was crazy after 6 months. But for me, it enabled me to really learn a lot of different things. If anybody's been involved in a early stage startup, they understand that you really get involved in everything. There's no real defined job requirements. You just do what needs to get done. Fast forward to 2000, I leveraged that experience to help start a company called eGenera, which was developing at the time a utility computing model, infrastructure for large enterprises to provide application support on any architecture at any time. In about 2009, I took over as CEO of that company and transitioned it into a software company focused on white label cloud services. So we provided a rebrandable cloud service for managed service providers. And that was my first foray into the subscription consumption or as a service type market. About 4 years ago, I came to Dell Technologies to manage the converged and hyperconverged business units. And recently, the company has asked me to manage the Apex Cloud business unit. And really what Apex Cloud is about providing Dell's extensive portfolio as a service in a consumption model to our customers. That includes our entire portfolio, but also our multi-cloud and hybrid cloud capabilities as well.
So Pete, we talk a lot about digital transformations on this show, but one thing we don't dig into a lot is the challenges that arise as part of the process of moving people to that world as a service. Now, I get to talk to a lot of organizations, and some of them keep asking, why is everything moving to as a service, particularly in IT? What's going on there?
Yeah. I mean, it's if you think about what's going on in the world today, start from the consumer lens, right? There's a lot of as a service offers out there, whether it be ride sharing products like Uber and Lyft or grocery products like Instacart. It's just making people's life easier. And it's given them the ability to focus their time and energy on things that are more important to themselves rather than grocery shopping or dealing with getting from point A to point B, right? So it takes that headache away from them. Same thing's happening in business to business. So if you look at banking, for example, they're providing a lot of capabilities as a service and on a subscription basis. Healthcare, telehealth, for example, is a good example of something that is helping their customers really manage their time better and get more services and more capabilities out of their vendors. The offshoot of that, though, what happens when you do that is the pace of innovation is moving so fast in this arena, the pressure on the IT organizations to deliver these as a service offers is incredible. And so increasingly we're seeing as a vendor that our customers want to be able to purchase their infrastructure as a service and even have it fully managed for them so they can then take their valuable resources and point them at solving business problems, not necessarily managing infrastructure, procuring infrastructure, installing it. Leave that, buy that as a service and focus your people on the things that drive your own particular business.
Right. Now, you brought up a couple good points here. Now, it sounds like a lot of the time, obviously IT operations are moving to cloud. It's a little easier to scale. What are some of the other biggest challenges that you're seeing from customers that they're moving to this more as a service approach?
Yeah, I mean, it really changes the focus. For years and years, the focus of these large organizations or even small organizations was around finding people that can buy, install, and manage infrastructure. Again, these companies want to focus more on what drives business value. So if you can take that out of the picture, whether it's a public cloud or an on-premises cloud, if you can take that component out and enable these enterprises to focus on their business value, that's the whole goal of cloud, right? And so some of the challenges, to answer your question, is transforming these IT environments to work in an as-a-service model, right? Getting their skill sets to be cloud-like, not just infrastructure and managing on-premises or physical data centers. We move these people to dealing with as a service, move them to providing business value through solutions as a service and getting more outcome-based services. It's a mind shift for these organizations, and that is definitely one of the bigger challenges. And there's a whole number of others behind that around security and data gravity and data locality that come into play here that these organizations have to deal with as well.
Right. We talked a lot about digital transformation, cloud lock-in. Obviously people are moving to the cloud, to multi-cloud. They want to have this distributed technology for print, but that's not easy to manage. It's something that, a lot of IT organizations almost, they kind of cringe at that factor. What is as a service? Why does it matter for those kind of multi-cloud scenarios?
Well, look, it's a multi-cloud world. What we've realized is, most customers or most companies are not going to go to one cloud and put all their eggs in one cloud basket, so to speak, right? And so it's a multi-cloud world and it's a hybrid cloud world. There are some applications that are just not suited for the public cloud market or the public cloud platforms. I mentioned quickly earlier things like data gravity. If you have large data sets you're working on, you may not want that in a public cloud. Or if you have security or if you've got regulatory issues, whether it's per country or just government or healthcare compliance issues, you may not want that in the public cloud either. So the reality is it's multi-cloud, it's hybrid cloud, and what you want to do, and one of the main strengths of Apex is the ability to manage your data and your solutions on premises, in a cloud, in a multi-cloud, in a hybrid cloud fashion. You want to be able to give that single use case for the customer to, or a single interface for the customer to manage this this hybrid environment that we're dealing with today.
Now, when you say single interface, do you mean that they're able to have a single dashboard, they're able to have a single set of policies, maybe API? What's kind of like entails on all that? That single pane of glass, I guess you could say.
It's single pane of glass, a good way to describe it, right? It's not just having a single interface to manage all your cloud estate, whether, again, if it's on-prem, hybrid, or in public cloud, but also managing all your subscriptions. I'll go back to the consumer view again. Anybody today is probably dealing with large, high single digits, or even in some cases, you know, tens of subscriptions that they're dealing with every month. You want to have a single place to be able to manage all your subscriptions, see all your subscriptions, see when they're expiring, see when they're rolling over, see what your costs are, right? You want to have a, you don't want to go to five different cloud consoles to do that. You want to come to one place, organize that, and get all that, from a single pane of glass.
Now, you talk a little about, obviously, with single pane of glass, it helps with a lot of other things. Like, for instance, you know, a lot of people are worried about, especially in multi-cloud scenarios, they're worried about securing things, because obviously a lot of these, you know, these different clouds, they have different user access controls, they have different visibility, they have different shared security models. Is this something that Apex is also going to help with, is just ensuring that your security model is also kind of normalized in a way?
It will. There'll be a single identity access management capability that runs through the Apex console, providing secure access to the all the subscriptions and assets that you're managing from an Apex point of view.
So that means if you make a policy change or even an access change, that will propagate to pretty much every cloud instance, whether it's your storage or it's even your services. It'll essentially handle all that for you.
With services that you're managing for via Apex, right? So certainly it's not go manage everything in a public cloud, but the assets that you're managing from an Apex point of view, certainly, that policy will permeate through.
So one thing that came to mind as I was, looking into a lot more of this is the fact that a lot of things are kind of being almost funneled through Dell Apex. And that means that there's going to need to be like almost low latency capabilities there. So that because you're funneling a lot of this through you, how is Dell Apex solving those challenges? Is making sure that things are, performant and things can stay up to speed.
It's really about choice of locality. So if you need a low latency interface, you can't afford to have latency even to the cloud, put Apex on premise, put it in a colo environment where you have fast interconnect to all the public clouds, right? So Apex allows you to put your IT estate wherever it best suits you, whether it's on premises, in a colo, or managed in cloud resources.
So what about resources? We talk a lot about, on the edge, network co-locating devices on the edge, obviously there's a lot of remote workers. How does that also handle through this? Is it that these devices would then connect up through Dell Apex, or would there be some kind of a gateway? How does that kind of handle for today's remote workforce and edge devices?
Yeah, I mean, edge is a special use case, right? There's a couple things about edge that make it interesting. One is the massive amounts of data that's generated on the edge. If you think about the data generated in your car or the data generated in a manufacturing plant, the amount of data is tremendous. And then also, as you mentioned, the physical locality of it and latency behind it, you need a network that can keep up either from a latency point of view, a bandwidth point of view, or you want to be able to do your calculations local and then upload your data later to a cloud that can do maybe additional artificial intelligence, machine learning on that data. So what Apex, again, allows you to do is put your infrastructure where it best suits your needs, allows you to connect them together and then manage them from a single pane of glass. To specifically answer your question, the underlying network technology, we're not providing anything, new or different than that. We're just leveraging existing technologies that are out there today from a networking point of view.
Well, we have lots more to talk about here. So when we come back, I do want to bring my co-hosts back in. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Plextrack, the premier cybersecurity reporting and workflow management platform that empowers teams to win the right security battles. Now, what if you could streamline the communication across the entire security department so that every team member could do their job more efficiently? Now, I got you thinking, right? From simplified data aggregation and reporting to integrated ticketing for remediation to analytics and visualizations for board reporting, Plextrack touches every aspect of the security management workflow. Gain a real-time view of your security posture by bringing all of your data sources together into one powerful platform where you can triage scanner results, generate powerful analytics and visualizations, and assign remediation tasks, test your posture, and track progress over time. As a satisfied PlexTrack client put it, we see PlexTrack as a part of our strategy to move quicker and be proactive. Now we have a real-time view of what we need to focus on, and I have an easy way of showing senior leadership. PlexTrack serves every aspect of the Enterprise Security Team program with features designed to improve workflow, collaboration, and communication for each role, including red team data aggregation, import data from all of your automated vulnerability scanners and tools, triage and report results in half the time. They also help improve blue team remediation. You can assign remediation tasks right on the platform or through simple integrations with the ticketing tools your team already uses and track progress over time. Stakeholder communication is also great. You use powerful yet simple analytics to attest to security posture and prioritize issues. Tailor attestation and communication to the needs of both team members and the C-suite. Continuous purple teaming assessment. Begin purple teaming or power up your current strategies with Runbooks, the best in industry tool for test plan execution. Security teams of all sizes and maturities can maximize the efficiency and effectiveness of their workflows with PlexTrack. Customers report that they see PlexTrack as part of our strategy to move quicker and be proactive, and the platform has a 5x return on investment in year one, and that it gives their cybersecurity operations a 30% increase in efficiency. PlexTrack improves the entire security engagement lifecycle by making it easy to generate security reports, deliver them securely, and track the issues to completion straight from the platform. Book a demo today. Try PlexTrack free for 1 month and see how it can change your life as a security professional. Simply go to PlexTrack.com/twit and claim your free month. That's PlexTrack.com/TWIT. And we thank PlexTrack for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Pino Manca. He's Senior VP and GM of Dell Apex. We're talking about multi-cloud, hybrid cloud, some of the challenges that go along with that. But I do want to bring my co-host back in. Chris, I want to throw this to you first.
Thanks, Lou. And Pete, you've been giving some great answers, but I want to look a little more closely at a couple of things. You know, you've been talking about the importance of having a single pane of glass, basically making it easier to manage what is an incredibly complex environment. And as we know, complexity is the enemy of good security and for that matter, good resilience. So my question is, while you're providing better management, is there any solution for the underlying complexity, or are we just destined to live in a world where the environment gets more and more complex as we go along?
Yeah, it's just a great question. There's complexity underneath all of these environments, as you pointed out, how we're offering our customers choice around simplifying that is we offer both managed and unmanaged versions of Apex. So if the customer has the capability and the skill set to manage their own on-premises cloud or hybrid multi-cloud estate, they can do that. But we also offer it fully managed. And so we take our large team of experts in this area and we manage it for the customer and take the complexity out of it for the customer.
All right. So let me ask this. If you are managing this for the customer, does that mean that you are also doing things like managing the business relationship with all of these cloud providers so that they essentially have fewer direct business relationships? Or I hate to say it, but are you just one more business relationship on the giant pile of business relationships they have to have?
Right. Now, we'd be managing that as well. It's really what you're talking about is the subscription capability, right? And managing all the subscriptions. And so Apex Console will manage that for the customers. Again, whether it's on premises or in a multi-cloud or hybrid cloud environment, you get to see all your subscriptions and manage them from one pane of glass. And if you choose the managed service offer, we'll manage that for you as well.
Very good. Now, one of the things I've got to ask, I have to believe that at this stage in the industry's evolution, everyone you're talking to already has some cloud relationships. The thing that we talk about in the industry, the greenfield business relationship is something that we just don't see anymore. So I've got to ask, from your perspective, and I think you have a unique perspective to in managing all of these, how cutthroat is it getting with people knowing that if they're going to go into a customer, they're probably cutting out someone else rather than coming into a new? Or is it the case where the clients are adding so many capabilities that they are simply able to add these relationships without going away from an existing provider?
I think they can do that. I think it's the latter. I think they can do that. As you mentioned, everybody's a grand statement, but most of our customers and partners have partnerships with cloud providers today and partnerships with multiple vendors today as well, right? So it's a very natural act for them to manage multiple partnerships together. We help that, again, with our managed service capabilities, but it's not too much of a stretch for these customers to manage an additional vendor. And let me just add one more component to that too, is the partner ecosystem plays a big part in this, right? Managed service providers, cloud service providers, they're often in the mix here, helping their customers manage these environments and manage all these vendor relationships as well. So there's a sort of a third leg to the stool that helps with this quite a bit.
Very good. Well, the last question I want to ask is something that I've actually been talking to a fair number of companies about, and we're hearing a lot about it in the industry. That's third-party risk. Third-party risk is a huge issue in a lot of different dimensions. And so I've got to ask, is that something that you end up talking to a lot of your customers about? Do they want to know how you're going to help them manage third-party risk? And from your perspective, how deeply do you have to look into the chain of dependencies in these other cloud services that you're being asked to manage on behalf of your customers?
Yeah, the answer is all the way down the stack, right? So we provide a service level agreement to our customers that we're held accountable to. And subsequently, we have to hold our subcontractors, if you will, accountable for their service level agreements. So you have to look all the way up and down the stack to make sure that you can manage and deliver on the service level that you sell your customers.
Very good. Well, I appreciate that. Now I know that my fellow co-host Brian Chi has a number of questions that he is dying to ask you. Brian, over to you.
Well, I want to ask, the world is changing, but when we first got started in the cloud world, we were hesitant to call it the perishable cloud. But a lot of people, when clouds really were getting started, would test the waters with perishable projects and use that as a kind of a stepping stone into going cloudier. So my favorite example of a perishable cloud project was actually the New York Times, when they had thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of scanned but not OCR'd back issues that they wanted to index and make available to the general public. Instead of spending a ton of money building a data center that would then have to be sold or reused or something after, say, 6 months, they started as one of the very first AWS customers and just bought a ton of compute cycles to do their project. So here's the question. As a provider, are you, and an integrator, are you guys seeing more and more of the perishable cloud being used for people to get into the cloud world? Or is the perishable cloud slowly fading away to more of a permanent cloud presence?
Yeah, I would say it's rapidly fading away, right? When I first got into cloud, you saw a lot of test dev type environments, and perishable is a great word, but things that if it were to go bump in the night, if the cloud were to go down, your business wouldn't suffer. That's changed dramatically over the years. And now the cloud is used for mission critical applications, mission critical data, secure data. I think we're way past that perishable point. What I will say, and I'll give one more plug for Apex here. What we are finding though with our customers is they want the choice of moving things to the public cloud or keeping them on-premise or having this hybrid environment to have a little bit of both. As we talked at the very beginning of the show, the world is hybrid, the world is multi-cloud. And so products like Apex allow you to give that choice to the customer so they can choose which applications and which data sets they want to put where. And I really think that's the key going forward.
Let's ask a slightly different question. With a name like Dell Apex, your mind starts to wonder whether or not this close relationship with a huge computer manufacturer can be brought to bear as part of the solution. I've seen Dell white box solutions for various on-premise solutions, but is that one of the things that Apex can do to work with Dell corporate on customizing solutions right down to specialized hardware?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we're working with Dell corporate. We are part of Dell, right? We are integrated into every business unit within Dell, trying to bring all of our products to offer our customers as subscription and as a service. And so the short answer is yes. But the thing about having a company the size of Dell, a massive IT organization with massive financing capability, we're able to provide these as a service offers backed by our internal financial systems as well. So our Dell Financial Services, we can offer our Flex on Demand capability via Apex, allowing customers to choose whatever configuration they want, whether it's a special configuration or if it's just a pure outcome they want, they can do that via Apex. And we have the backing of the entire corporation for that.
Fantastic. I do have one more question, because in a lot of organizations, they're trying to figure out how to get started. Now, we have these small, medium-sized businesses. We have these enterprise-level organizations that listen to us, and they always have this question. Hey, we're trying to move. We're trying to digitally transform. We're trying to do it in a successful manner. We're trying to kind of roll it out quickly. How do we do this? How do we get started? What do we do to get in touch with Dell Apex? What could organizations do here?
Sure. I mean, you can reach out to us via the website. You can reach out to us through your sales rep. We have the capability to onboard customers into our console. And so the customers can come in and they can get a feel for Apex console, how it works, how they can manage their subscriptions and manage their infrastructure via the console. So we have that capability today. I would say simply reach out to your rep or via the website, and we'll get you set up on the console and get you up and running.
Fantastic. Well, unfortunately, time flies when you're having fun. Pete, thanks so much for being here. We're ready to close up, but I do want to give you a chance. Anything else you wanted to tell the audience about Dell Apex? Anything that's upcoming? Or again, how do they get started? Where can they go?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we covered a lot. It was great. I really appreciate the time. I would say stay tuned to Dell Tech World coming up in a couple of weeks, and you'll see some more announcements around multi-cloud and Dell Apex. So stay tuned for more really exciting stuff coming up.
Fantastic. Thank you again, Pete. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the Best Dang Enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, starring with our very own Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, what's going on for you in the coming weeks, and where can people find you?
I am tinkering. Must tinker. Lots of tinkering. I finally uncovered my big stash of Raspberry Pi gear, so I'm going to be doing a little bit of integration and customization there. But you know what? I'm also going to be working on lining up guests, and so I'm playing Tetris, trying to make everything fit. So we've got some great ideas coming from our viewers, and I'd like to hear more about it. My Twitter address is ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab. You're also welcome to drop me a line on my twit.tv email address, which is Chebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv. Or if you'd like, Twiat at twit.tv. We'll hit all the Twiat hosts. We'd love to hear from you. And for those of you listening and trying to struggle with the colloquialisms and so forth that we use and slang, don't worry. You're welcome to throw questions at us in whatever your native language is, as long as you realize we're going to be using a machine translator of some sort. But we'll be more than happy to try and answer your questions and use the Google Translate or Microsoft Translate to give you an answer in your native language. So don't let the language barrier get in your way. Love to hear from you. Love to know what you're doing in the world of enterprise IT.
I wish I had a stash of lots of Raspberry Pi gear. Thanks. Thanks for Cheebert for being here. Well, folks, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what's going on for you in the coming weeks and where can people find you?
Well, I'm going to be writing for both Omdia and our subscribers and over at Dark Reading for everyone to read. I should have an article on Dark Reading this coming week. I'll keep checking in over there, or better yet, follow me on Twitter. I'm at KG4GWA, and I will always tweet about my latest activities there. As I said, I'm getting ready for RSA. I'm going to be going there in real life, and we'll look forward to seeing people there. If you're going to be there, please drop me a note. Would love to see all of the Twiat subscribers and viewers there in the city by the bay.
Thank you, Curtis. Thanks for being here. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and catch up on your enterprise and IT news. Go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twiat, that you'll find all of our amazing back episodes, the show notes, the co-host information, the guest information, and the links of the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly, next to those videos, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version or your video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your applications or any one of your podcast applications or any one of your devices, because we're on all of them. Definitely subscribe and support the show. Plus, you probably already heard, but it's amazing. You should hear again. It's Club Twit. That's right. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else. And it's only $7 a month. Plus, you can now join annually as well. And there are a lot of great things that, you know, Club Twit has. One of them is the exclusive access to members-only Discord server, chat with hosts, producers, separate discussion channels, plus lots of special events, plus lots of fun, some really fun and interesting conversations and content on there. I really love it. Join Club Twit and be part of this movement. Go to twit.tv/Club Twit. Plus, Club Twit now offers corporate group plans as well, in addition to their annual plans. It's a great way to get your team access to our ad-free tech podcast. And the plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month. And you can add as many seats as you like. And this is a great way to get your IT department or even your sales department, your developers, tech teams to stay up to date on all of our podcasts. And it's just like the regular membership. They can join the Twit Discord server. They can get the Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So definitely check that out and join Club Twit, twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe and impress your friends, your family members, your coworkers with the gift of Twiat, because we talk a lot about some fun topics on the show. We're just talking about in the chat room how we had a really great and interesting show today. Share the gift of Twiat with your friends and family, because I guarantee they will find it interesting and enjoyable as well. Now, if you've already subscribed and you're available on 1:30 p.m. on Fridays, we do this show live at live.twit.tv. That's where all the streams are at. Come see how the pizza's made, all the behind the scenes, all the banter that we do here on Twit at live.twit.tv. And if you're going to join the stream live, you might as well join the famous IRC channel as well, the irc.twit.tv. We have a lot of great characters in there. We get everything in there. We get show titles. We get content for the show, questions, great conversations. So definitely check it out and be inside there. The hosts go inside there. We just really have a really great time. So definitely join the IRC channel at irc.twit.tv. Definitely hit me up at twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all of my enterprise tidbits. You can direct message me for show ideas. I have so many great conversations on there. It's unbelievable how many how many people reach out, and I just have really great conversations, some really great show ideas that I share with the rest of the team. So just please hit me up there, because I love hearing from you. And you know, if you want to know what I do during my normal work week at Microsoft, definitely check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the latest and greatest ways you can customize your office experience to make it more productive for you and organization, whether it's creating macros in the cloud, whether it's, you know, customizing Outlook to do what you needed to do. Check it out. It's a really great way to really get Office doing things that you needed to do. I also want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. I also want to thank all of the staff and engineers at Twit. We couldn't do the show without them. And of course, I want to thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. He does all the bookings and the plannings for the show, and we really couldn't do the show without him. So Cheever, thank you again for all your support. Now, before we sign out, I want to thank our editor, Anthony, for today. He's the guy that fixes us up after the fact. So Anthony, thank you for making us look good. And of course, thank you for making us look good live is our very own TD. He's the talented Mr. Ant Pruitt. Ant, thanks so much. Like, you do this fabulous show each and every week, hands-on photography. I look forward to it every week. I listen to it every week, especially on my walks and my runs. What's coming up this week? So what should I look forward to?
Well, sir, thank you very much for checking out the show. This time I had a guest, Mr. Harry Williams, a pretty amazing photographer here in the Bay Area. And he has a very interesting take on street photography. And they were like up close and personal, pretty intimate street photos. And it's just a really good story, including some stuff that includes his family. It was quite the show. Heart-moving stuff, you know, heartwarming.
Fantastic. Definitely check it out. Like I said, I learn something each and every week. Thanks, Sam. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android, on twit.tv.